Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Just Us Talks with Tisha, my weekly blog talk radio where I discuss issues from social justice to the law. My name is Tisha Hillman, and I am a Maryland attorney practicing in the areas of family law, criminal law, and personal injury. Now, I do this show every week, every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. I also am on 95.9 and 1450 a.m. every first Friday of the month on a show called The Marketing Pulpit. It's at 10:30 to 11:30, and you can tune in every single week on the Blog Talk, and you can also hear me every first Friday of the month. So today I want to talk about prenuptial agreements and the way to prevent your prenuptial agreement from being unfair, right? Because if you have tuned into any of my shows, or particularly I did a show a couple of months ago about prenuptial agreements and how to basically how to draft a prenuptial agreement or the terms that were necessary in order to have a valid prenuptial agreement. But prenuptial agreements are something that is, they're very complicated. And so it's something that you certainly need an attorney who is well-versed in the areas of the law, specifically as they relate to prenuptial agreements, to help you with such. If you want to make sure that your agreement is going to hold up in court, because at the end of it all, what's the most important thing is that your agreement is something that is going to be valid under the eyes of the law. But before I talk about that, I want to talk about the shooting recently of a young man by the name of Jordan. I believe his last name was Douglas, and I'll correct that if I'm incorrect. The problem that I find in these cases is year after year, month after month, you have young black men usually, and just black men in particular, who are victims of shootings of police officers. And the reason it bothers me just as a human being, but it bothers me in particularly as a woman of color, because, you know, we have these shootings, and what ends up happening is the family never gets justice. And I think that is the most infuriating thing of it all, is that you have families who are grieving at the loss of their loved one for no reason and for no fault of their own, right? Like you have, if you think about the shooting of, Alton Sterling or Philando Castile or, you know, any of these people, who die at the hands of law enforcement, the common thread is that the families never get justice. And I think that is the, that ends up driving these protests, because it's far too common that people of color are seen as less than human, as less than worthy of living a normal life, of less than credible, of less than every single thing, because in this country, like it or not, white supremacy is the underlying thread that runs through almost every single thing that happens in this country. Because when the Constitution, it was drafted by white men, most of whom, if not all of whom, had some level of wealth, because at that time, wealth was primarily based on land ownership and things of that nature, because if you recall, at that time, women, and certainly not people of color, women could not own property. People of color were property. And so the underlying thread of our Constitution, the laws that govern this country, are seeped in white supremacy. And very very hurtful to know that this continues to happen, and that no one, and when I say no one, I mean our lawmakers, are not doing anything that I can see to actively change the unfair ways that laws are applied to people of color in this country. If you recall, there was maybe about a year or so ago, there was a hashtag that was trending, and the hashtag was criming while white. That is, you had a series of people, white people, who would talk about the things that they did that were illegal, and their interactions with law enforcement, and how their interactions with law enforcement never led to them being murdered, never led to them being arrested, prosecuted, none of those things. Sometimes, I read tweets about people who were in the middle of something that they were doing that was illegal. Law enforcement may have pulled them over. Say, for instance, it was a DUI. Law enforcement may have pulled them over and drove them home. That would never happen to a person of color. Never. Because they would immediately be arrested. Bothers me. Because a lot of times we have people in this country, and I see it all the time, if you go on social media and you look at any of the comments, when any black person is killed at the hands of law enforcement or while in the custody of law enforcement, you will always find someone who will say, well, if they would have done X, that would not have happened to them. However, the thing that always gets to me is that these same people will never stop and think, if this person were white, would I be making the same argument? And usually, they either don't seem to get it or don't seem to care that the same arguments are never made when the victim is white. I think about the men, and I don't remember, I think it was it Bundy? And it wasn't not the serial killer, but the people who took over the federal property at gunpoint. And, this went on for days. They were on federal land with guns. But none of them end up being shot. And it's what I'm trying to say is the laws of this country are unfairly applied to people of color. The rules are unfairly applied to people of color because of that little thing called white supremacy and also white privilege, right? Because white privilege means that just by virtue of you being white, you are the standard. You are the standard of all that is good, of all that is holy, of all that is right. And that's not right. Because what it means when you are the standard is that people of color can never live up to that because they're of color. And so they don't have that privilege. They don't have the privilege of going into a church, murdering people, and then having law enforcement taking them to Burger King. But what you do have is a young black boy who is on his way from a party, straight A student, and I'll get to that in a second. Story comes out, and law enforcement makes their statement. Of course, once the video is released, the statement the law enforcement initially made was an absolute lie. And this happens all the time. And people of color, we know this. We talk about it amongst ourselves, that we know exactly what's going to happen because it's always this kill, rinse, repeat, right? It's the same things over and over and over where you never get justice. Law enforcement, they have, I think it's maybe 72 hours, they have a cooling off period after a shooting where they get to cool off before they make a statement. And that's something that they negotiate in their contracts with their unions. But if I were to go out and shoot someone, I wouldn't have a 72-hour cooling off period before I had to say why I shot someone. That wouldn't occur. Why? Because not only am I a regular citizen, but I'm also a person of color. And so I know, and I've known since birth, because it's taught to us and we see it over and over again, that the rules don't apply to me the same way they apply to people that are white because of the privilege that you have. And my heart breaks for the family of this young boy, because although he was a straight-A student, I think that the thing that I want to say about that is, even if the kid was failing out of school, even if he was smoking weed every day, even if he were, you know, had a juvenile record, that does not excuse the unjustified murder of that young boy. And that's what I mean when I say just us, because sometimes it's just us. Many times it's just us having to fend for ourselves, to know our own rights, and to protect ourselves from these arcane and unjust rules that are that we call the law, right? And I fully understand, you know, as an officer of the court, how the law works. And I see it every single day. I see it in sometimes in family law cases. I see it in the criminal work that I do. I see the way that the law applies. And it makes me angry, because I know that even though I swore to uphold the laws of this state and of this land, I still know that at the end of it all, those laws are not going to apply to people who look like me the same. And I think the young man's name, I got it wrong, is Jordan Edwards. And yeah. So what I want to say is, it doesn't matter if this person or a person is a straight-A student or not a straight-A student or anything else. People deserve to be able to live their lives. Young boys and young children of color deserve to be able to go to a pool party without, you know, the story where the young girl in the bikini was thrown on the ground by law enforcement, and they said that she was a threat. How? She clearly didn't have a weapon. She had on a bikini. You know, young girl, young black girl, may have been 98 pounds. Somehow she was a threat to this 200 plus pound man, a gun, and this young girl in a bikini, 98 pounds, was a threat. It breaks my heart, because I have brothers and friends and uncles and cousins and loved ones who are black men. And it's not just black men. This happens to black people in general and brown people. And that's not to say that it doesn't happen to anyone else. But what I am saying is that overwhelmingly it happens to people of color. And it breaks my heart, and it's unfair. And I call on the people that represent us, the people that we elected and put into positions of power, to care. And that is why people protest and shout Black Lives Matter, because we want you to understand that our lives matter too. Our lives matter too. Our children matter too. It is not fair that, you know, I think it was maybe about 2 weeks ago, a group of black boys, I posted a video, a group of black boys were, you know, shooting each other with water guns. And a white couple got out of their vehicle and yelled at these children, telling them to stop doing what they were doing, to stop shooting each other with water guns. In fact, the male in the vehicle got out of the vehicle and pulled a gun on these children because they did not listen to these adults who felt like it was their right to get out of their vehicles and stop what these children were doing. Now, if these were young white children, they never would have stopped. They probably would have driven by and smiled and maybe would have given them money for ice cream. All these kids were doing were playing. But for some reason, white supremacy and white privilege, our children aren't able to do that. They're not able to be children. Like Tamir Rice with a toy gun. Police got out and opened fire on this young boy, 12 years old, young boy, playing by himself. All because a white person called and said, there's somebody with a gun. They did not approach him and ask him a single question. They got out of their vehicles and opened fire. Now, I guarantee you, if Tamir Rice were Tommy Rice, a young white boy, that encounter would have been completely different. And that is what I want people to understand. That is what I want people to know when they encounter Black Lives Matter protesters. And when people say, oh, you're pulling the race card. People like to say that when you just mentioned race. When a person of color just mentions race, they're pulling the race card. Or they're being racist. Because they highlight the injustices that people of color in this country experience. They're pulling the race card. They're being racist. Or even mentioning race. Right? And it baffles my mind. But anyway, I'm heartbroken. But what I wanted to talk about was prenuptial agreements and the ways to make prenuptial agreements fair. Because a part of what has to happen if you are trying to get a prenuptial agreement done, it has to be fair. And prenuptial agreements, the very essence of a prenuptial agreement is an agreement. It is a legally binding contract, if it's done correctly. It is a legally binding contract that obligates you to whatever is in that contract. And because it's a contract, it has to have the foundation of what makes a contract. And one of those things is a mutual meeting of the minds. And so you can understand why if a contract is somehow unconscionable or was entered into under duress, why that would not be potentially a valid contract, because there would be no mutual meeting of the minds, right? And so the courts have determined there's a couple of circumstances. If you're going to argue that if you're trying to invalidate a prenuptial agreement by saying, okay, well, I signed the agreement under duress. What the courts have said is that there's a couple of circumstances that don't constitute duress. So you can't argue potentially, well, they said that they wouldn't marry me if I didn't sign it. And that's a big one. Courts have ruled that that's not duress in the execution of a premarital agreement, nor is pregnancy, the refusal to make requested changes. Like if you say, well, I don't agree with this particular term, you would think that that would mean that there's no mutual meeting of the mind. But the courts have determined that that is refusal to make changes to the prenuptial agreement is not a reason to invalidate the agreement under the legal principle of duress. If you sign the prenuptial agreement late, for instance, I had someone recently that their husband had them, or future husband had them sign the prenuptial agreement. I think it was the morning of the wedding or the day before. So what the courts have said is that the first presentation of the agreement the day before the wedding, specifically if the agreement was discussed at an earlier point, even in general, is not grounds for invalidating the agreement based on the duress. Nor is a lack of counsel, and I'm going to talk about that again in just a second, because it's very important that if you are trying to draft a prenuptial agreement and you are the person that is presenting the agreement to your future spouse to sign the agreement, it's important that they have counsel. However, the courts have said that a lack of counsel does not equate to duress, nor is the poor quality of your counsel a reason for duress. So you got to be careful when you are drafting a prenuptial agreement. Unequal bargaining power, not grounds for duress. If you say you didn't understand the terms or you had a lack of sufficient time to seek counsel, none of those things constitute duress. What does is generally a combination of what the court will consider egregious circumstances. Those are the types of circumstances that the court says, okay, this is grounds to invalidate a premarital agreement for duress. It's a combination of egregious circumstances. So you want to make sure that you present your agreement to an attorney prior to presenting the agreement and finalizing the agreement, that you present it to counsel. Now, I mentioned counsel because one of the things that will help you if you are trying to show the court that your agreement is not somehow unconscionable or unfair to the weaker party. And when I say the weaker party, I mean weaker by way of finances. So for an example, if $500,000 decides that he's going to get married and his wife or his partner make $50,000, right? That person that makes $50,000 would be considered the weaker party for purposes of the law, of course. So if you want to help prove your case, you want to make sure that you provide counsel for the weaker party, that you offer them the opportunity to at least pay for a part of their representation to make sure that they have equal bargaining power in the now. When you have independent advice of independent counsel, in most cases, that will certainly show the court that there is no lack of voluntariness. And when I say voluntariness, you know, if you're trying to get a prenuptial agreement invalidated, like I just said, I talked about duress, if you don't want your agreement invalidated, one of the ways is by having the other party have the advice counsel. At least they should have a meaningful opportunity to obtain legal advice if they so desire. Now, if they don't want legal counsel, you probably want to make sure that the agreement says that something to the effect of the other person had the opportunity to seek counsel and they chose not to. So one of the other things when it comes to ways to make sure that your agreement is not invalidated is that you present the agreement far enough in advance where the other person has had the opportunity to thoroughly look at the agreement, examine the agreement, and as I said before, seek the advice of counsel. When you're talking about fairness to the agreement, Maryland cases follow the majority position that the fairness of the agreement is solely judged by the execution. So you want to make sure that you do these things before you get married, because if the circumstances occur after the marriage, for one of the parties wants to invalidate the agreement. If these issues occur after you get married, it's not going to affect the validity of the agreement, right? So you want to make sure that the execution of the agreement itself, and that is why you want to present it in advance, so that the other person can have the opportunity to seek the advice of independent legal counsel. Now, one of the ways that the courts have said that you can challenge the enforcement of an agreement is if there was overreaching in the circumstances that led to the execution. So a premarital agreement that was just merely unfair, like, for instance, one that provides for the a disparate allocation of resources at the divorce or death, will be upheld if it was executed in a procedurally fair manner. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. So when it comes to the law, when you are married, just by virtue of the title of husband, wife, partner, whatever the case may be, if you are legally married under the law in the state of Maryland, there are several things that you are entitled to upon death or divorce. And I'm not going to go into all of that because I talked about it at a previous episode of Just Us Talks with Tisha. But at death or divorce, you know, the parties are, you know, say for instance you have a pension, and at death or divorce, the spouse is entitled to a portion of that upon death or divorce. However, in a prenuptial agreement, you can potentially avoid some of the distributions that the law would naturally allow for. You can avoid some of those by having a prenuptial agreement, and you can change the distribution. And so when I say that there's a disparate allocation of resources, the Maryland courts have said that that doesn't necessarily invalidate the agreement because one party got more than the other at death or divorce pursuant to the prenuptial agreement. So what the courts have said, though, if the agreement was executed in a procedurally fair manner, it's going to be upheld. So what this all boils down to is just making sure your agreement is fair, that it was fair manner, that it was not, there was no overreaching in the circumstances that led to the execution, that the agreement was presented far enough in advance for the other party to have the advice of independent legal counsel, hopefully competent counsel, and that the other party has had the opportunity to read the agreement. So go back, listen to some of these things, and if you have concerns about a prenuptial agreement that you've drafted, you can certainly give my office a call. My phone number is 301-744-7996. You can also visit my website at www.tshillmanlaw.com for more information. And you can certainly call my office and schedule a consultation. You can also set up a consultation online on my website, because you want to make sure that whatever it is that you are trying to execute, that it will hold up in court. Now, close out by saying, I know that the first half of my show was very, very heavy because it's a very heavy subject. However, it's important that everyone is treated with equal respect, dignity, and everything else. And that's part of the reason that I became an attorney in the first place, because I believe in justice. I believe in equality. I believe in fairness. And so it's difficult sometimes to look at these situations and see unfairness, individual lives. You want to make sure that you protect yourself, you protect your loved ones by knowing the law, by knowing your rights. And if you have any questions, give me a call. I'll certainly talk to you about what your rights are during a consultation. But at the end of the day, know your rights, because when it comes to the end, it's just us. Tune in next week at 10 o'clock with Just Us Talks with Tisha.